You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled, and marginalized creatives and their art.
This is the bit where I ask for help. You can now support the show by signing up as a patron on Patreon. I absolutely love putting the podcast together, but unfortunately, it costs money. I'd also really like to be able to add a transcription to the podcast, as I know that there's some people out there who would really benefit from having that kind of access. Unfortunately, that's not something I can do myself. However, there are apps that will do it for me, but they also cost money. If you can afford to help me keep the podcast going and help me get the transcription service in place, please sign up to my Patreon for as little as £1 a month on patreon.com/agparker. If there's another way you'd like to donate, please do get in touch. I'm definitely interested in selling ad space on the podcast, and any other donations are most welcome. And now, on with the show. I'm so excited to welcome to the podcast today, Mild Peril. Mild Peril is a strange genderfuck drag artist who brings camp, sex and political satire to the stage. A finalist of Lip Sync 1000 and Top of the Slops, they incorporate their Asian heritage and queer identity in lip syncing, dance and comedy. Welcome to the podcast, Mild.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
I'm so excited. I've seen so many videos of your work and I absolutely love what you do. You do so much that challenges a lot of kind of prejudices and a lot of kind of societal norms as well. So this is very exciting.
Oh, thank you. Well, to be honest, the stuff, you know, up on the internet, Instagram, TikTok is really the best bits. We don't look at the embarrassing fails.
Oh my God. I love that. It's just the best of compilation. That's great.
You've got to do it for social media, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm terrible at social media, but I definitely wouldn't say that my best bits are on social media. But
I mean, it's difficult. You know, I'm just like, I don't want to sound like an old person because I'm 25 and technically part of Gen Z, but like, sometimes it's just so much work.
It's so much work. I am 33 and I feel 33
when I look at it. You don't look it, so.
Oh, thank you so much. You're so kind. But yeah, definitely when it comes to when I see other people's reels and all their social media and like TikTok, I haven't even started on TikTok and I don't think I'm ever going to get there because it's just, it is a lot of effort. How do you find marketing yourself as a performer on social media as well as putting together your act?
I suppose, well, I guess marketing myself, but I think this is also like, I guess, what I wanted to think about my drag identity is that it's difficult because I suppose like the stuff that gets a lot of traction on social media is like, you know, the really sort of glitzy, glam, I would say like stereotypical, but like a very mainstream image of drag as well as like sort of femme presenting drag. So I think I struggled with that in terms of like just figuring out what I want to do as a drag artist a bit, as well as like on presenting on social media, putting them in a mixture of stuff that is sort of glam alongside the sort of stuff that's a bit sillier or more satirical.
I'd say you're very glam from what I've seen.
Well, thank you. Again, like best bits. But I think, I suppose, in terms of what I want to do in performance, my point of view can be best summarized as going on stage, trying to look glam, make people think this is just another drag queen doing something to a pop song, and subverting that about a minute in by either doing some, a bit of a cheeky take on the song, or you're bringing some different kind of message to it, like satire.
Yeah.
I think that's where, like, the stuff that I'm most proud of are numbers which kind of take, bits of various different songs, various clips, say from comedy show, from news, whatever, that kind of tell a complete story or take people on a journey with a bit of a message, not necessarily to like sort of preach to people or educate them, but kind of say, like, here's where I'm coming from, here's what I want to say, let's have fun with this, but let's also get to a point where we have a common understanding
yeah.
of what we're trying to say.
I think that was fantastic. And you talk about the challenges of appealing to an audience versus staying true to your art. Is that something that you find when you do kind of approach the glam versus satirical, political, is that kind of something that you consider?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I suppose in terms of just crafting a piece of work, just on like putting the audio together, as we've all had a process of like trying to find, search for various clips on the internet, download it, pull it together in
yeah.
something like Audacity.
Yeah,
I think.
that's what I use, and it's like an hour's worth of listening to, like, to get one song audio for like Boris Johnson for or whatever, you have to sit and listen to an hour's worth of Boris Johnson saying things.
Oh, exactly. It's terrible, and sometimes I have to go on incognito mode. Just because I don't want my search results on YouTube to be clogged up with
yeah.
Boris Johnson stuff, or like Liz Truss and that bloody lettuce and everything like that. But yeah, so as I was in the sort of process of putting that together, I guess I do tend to start off from having a mind of what I want to achieve. So I will, alongside putting the audio together, usually have an idea of how I want to look, like what I want to wear,
yeah,
how I want that to go. So like the look is part of the consideration, but I suppose the big thing I want to do, and which was a good piece of advice someone else gave me, is make sure you set the stage well so that people understand what you're going for. If you're trying to communicate something to the audience, they get it.
Yeah,
get it within the 3 or 4 minutes of the number. So sometimes it's sacrificing a little bit of complexity for clarity.
Yeah.
When it comes to an audience, but if I say when it comes to performing, I've definitely quote unquote sold out to when performing in front of an audience who are not necessarily there to see alternative drag, or are not a majority queer audience, making stuff that's it's more palatable or less challenging.
It's a very different audience, isn't it? And it's a very different feel in a venue when you have a predominantly straight cishet audience instead of a queer audience. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's when you know, like, there's different venues you can perform at. For example, I would say East London is more alternative if you compare to like Soho, and then. It's then, I would pick and choose which numbers I then do according to the audience.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And
it's definitely that.
In an ideal world with the queerest, most inclusive audience that you could possibly get, would your numbers kind of differ from what you do now, or do you still manage to bring that authenticity to your art?
I feel like I do manage to bring that authenticity to my art at the moment when I'm someplace like, say, The Glory, or in something like, so, for example, Top of the Slops, which was a drag competition hosted at The Glory like last...
By Vanilla Parker Bowles. Yeah, Bowles,
yes.
Even.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and doing a second season now. I think they're just in the heats. But so... but yeah, that was August, September last year. And that was pretty much like all alternative performers. Like, I don't think there's one person you look in that cast and go, that is a standard like drag race drag queen.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, but yeah, it was kind of a free fall in terms of doing whatever you want. Although I would say even in that context, I think there's a push towards doing stuff which is comedic, or like not getting too serious with one's material. But that being said, like that's the sort of places in which I feel I can like do what I want to do, talk about stuff like periods or immigration. Or,
I love your period thing.
Or family. So thank you. It's one of the few acts which I'm like, I like it. I think I will happily like bring it back,
Yeah.
because I don't know. I'm sufficiently overthinking. I overthink a lot, but also enough perfectionist to be like, there's some numbers which I really like and really want to do, but there's very few of them, and the majority of stuff is like, I'm okay with this, but I might come back to fix it later and then
Yeah.
never actually do
You seem to
it.
have quite a large repertoire
Yeah.
of stuff that you can bring to different places.
Thank you. I mean, I would like to say I do. But again, I don't, for example, I don't really have any sort of festive or like holiday related things.
Oh, okay.
Obviously not
When
yet.
did you start? Yeah. When did you start drag?
So I started like, I guess like proper gigs and stuff in February last year.
Wow.
I don't really have a defined start date, because so the way it went into drag is, so it's like July 2021. So I had a different friend who also does drag but also improv. He runs a show called Lippy, which just started in Aldgate East, is now in the Glory, which is an open mic lip sync night.
Okay.
So what he does is a lot of like character comedy kind of lip syncing things, but then it's open to other people to join. So I went along to one of those nights and lip synced in drag, and then did it a few more times at other nights that he did that year, and then kind of got into, well, I think I can do this, and I have ideas.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how it evolved. And I suppose I mean, it took me a while, I guess, to find my thing, or my art. Sounds a bit pretentious, but like, I was finding the things that I found fulfilling to do in drag, which is a lot of like political, provocative, stuff. And so I think there's more things I want to do, because the main thing I do right now is lip syncing and dancing, which is all great. There's other stuff I want to do more of, like sort of spoken word and stand up.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it started. It's not some great origin story. It's I think like many drag artists. I mean, I don't know about you. It's like seeing other people do it and just being like, I could do that.
Yeah, all right. Oh my God, I really want to do that. Can I do that?
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. And so you've had all these wonderful kind of opportunities to play in queer spaces and to play at different nights and kind of explore who you are as a performer. How has it been? And you've only been going, quite a short time. So how has it been finding your signature style?
Oh, very good question. I think it's it. I'm not sure I've found a signature style yet, really, so much as I kind of know what I want to do and I do it, irrespective of whether not it's wise. And I guess some people are nice or foolish enough to have me on stage. Yeah, because I suppose if I think about what's influenced my point of view, and it's going to sound weird, it's probably like the comedian Stuart Lee.
Okay, tell me
I
more.
say that because like the way it does comedy is like it's all the persona of someone who's kind of taking the piss out of his audience as well as himself, but it's
Yeah.
all about like fairly like for the political topics, but really taking it to sort of ludicrous extremes.
Yeah.
Like there's a bit of routine which I'm sure is on YouTube. He kind of talks about UKIP and the Pulse and like them telling people to immigrants to go back home, the bestest and the brightest of those immigrants should benefit their own country, and then taking to extreme and talk about telling historically the French Huguenots to go back home, or indeed the fish people to crawl back into the ocean and start trying to crawl onto land. I think that's like, and weird enough, that's where I get my sort of point of view in terms of there's issues like, again, like genuinely around immigration, around like period poverty,
Yeah.
or say around mental health, which I do want to comment on, and then my brain does sort of some weird things in terms of connecting certain songs to another, or thinking like some songs would be useful to use to talk about this kind of issue. And yeah, and then that's how it creates stuff, really.
Yeah,
It's not a
fabulous.
prototype process.
I think that's great. I'm always so curious to know kind of what the inspiration for different, different artists is and different sets, because you see such a wide variety from the same performer sometimes as well. And so it isn't just as simple, I think, for us to always say, well, this is who. This is kind of like quintessential, like Mild Peril, or because we are so diverse, because we do have so many things that we want to say, especially if you're coming from any kind of intersectional identity. So you, one of the things you wanted to talk about was the intersectionality between queerness and being Asian,
Yeah.
and the more subtle kinds of discrimination from being Asian in queer spaces. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, sure. So I guess in terms of intersectionality, yeah, I suppose. So I grew up outside the UK. So basically, my parents moved to Hong Kong shortly before I was born. So that was where I grew up. And I suppose, one hand, like with sort of many places that have been colonized, there's a whole like history of queerness in sort of in China and Asia, which has sort of gone buried or oppressed as part of like colonialism by Britain and other European powers. For example, you know, for example, historical queer figures in Chinese history, or we talk about like say Hijra people, trans people in South Asia, were again like more or less criminalized under British rule. So there's something that's quite like interesting to me historically, but I suppose growing up in Hong Kong, queerness was not really a thing. And then I was moving to UK for university when I was 18. I think very often the kind of queer people you see in the media are still like white, cis, gay men. Predominantly, these are the sort of prominent examples of what your quote unquote a gay person looks like. So I think there's it's both a level of representation, but also like the extent to which being queer and being a sort of a person of color influences your experiences of whether, for example, one is seen as being Asian first or being queer first. I would say stereotypically, but having conversations with one's family about being queer, which was a very fun thing to do with my parents when I came up with as trans. Not very fun at all, but luckily they don't live in this continent, so that's good for me. I'm
I'm sorry
avoiding
to hear
them.
that, but glad that there's
Yeah, well, you know, it's like. I think like if you're queer and you have accepted parents, you're very lucky. But I suppose for many of us in the community,
it's just
that's
not a
not a privilege
reality.
we enjoy. Yeah, that's true. But also, as it goes around, like in a lot of queer spaces, again, tends to be dominated a lot by white people, and it's a thing that's sort of recognized, for example, on Grindr and other places where queer people, I would say it's like especially gay men, but I'm sure other queer people are guilty of this. It's like talk about their sort of sexual preferences in terms of like not wanting to sleep with people of color, or if I was like saying they're not attracted to people of color, which is problematic and also a difficult conversation to have in terms of like what we say is, we can't force people to have sexual attraction to other people, but like the extent to which attractional preferences will be influenced by things like lack of representation or racism, is a challenging to have, and I'm now gesturing with my hands, which is not that you can do in a podcast.
I mean, it's so that is something that I don't understand where people are coming from when they say things like that. And I have been privy to to some conversations, and I now do not associate with
these two people that I'm about to talk about anymore because problematic. But these are people from diverse backgrounds. They have their own things, which mean that other people in society kind of view them a certain way, so that they're used to experiencing prejudice themselves. But when it comes to talking about people from different backgrounds, people of color, they use the whole sexual preference thing, and that somehow excuses what would otherwise be seen as racism. And that's something that I don't understand, especially within our community, within the queer community.
And I don't get it either. It's just, well, it's layered the problematicness, and I kind of wonder, or this is my theory at least, it's like, because we grow up in places which are both like cishet normative, but which also inevitably heavily favours the sort of ethnic majority. In person being queer or being a person of colour, you kind of have to unlearn or undo a lot of these prejudices.
Yeah.
But not everyone undoes all of them or thinks about all of them in that way.
Yeah, and maybe it's a case of not realising that the work has to be done as opposed to not being willing to do the work.
Yeah,
sorry, going down a sinkhole in my mind. Sorry, Miles, continue to say very intelligent and wise things that you as you were doing before.
And no, it's definitely all extremely relevant things, right? Because I know, like, yeah, I've been acquainted with friends with, like, again, says quite gay men of the older generation. Talk to them, it's like, I mean, yes, it is like some individuals are more willing to listen than others, but it's also like the extent to which they realize by themselves, like, there are certain sort of problematic thoughts and behaviors that need to be unlearned around, for example, things like, yeah, like sexual preferences or like assumptions or stereotypes that are being made around people of color or say like A5 people, that sort of thing. And so I think when it comes to an intersection of like people who are queer and who are both queer and Asian, there's not that many people we find on a day-to-day basis. And like obviously there is like queer Asian community in the UK in London, and obviously let's give a shout out to the Britain Peach as well.
Yeah.
Which is like Asian to queer Asian sort of drag art artistic performance collective, which is great, but again, like, there's only so many people, there's only so much representation that exists,
and that's the issue, isn't it? As you say, if there isn't that representation there, people have had all of these prejudices kind of fed to them through mainstream media or through whatever household situation they grew up in, and so they're having to unlearn it, but oftentimes they don't even realize that they have to unlearn it. But yeah, that's why representation, especially in queer spaces, is really important.
Yeah. And like outside of queer spaces as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean everywhere.
Yeah, no, definitely. Because I say, given I work full time in a place that shall not be named, but basically it's like predominantly cishet people and white people in my workplace, which is like, it's fine, I can like keep up with the conversation. There's also like a big part of my personal life which I don't discuss, which other people may be very able to talk about, like how they look after the kids or like, I know, hang out with families in the weekends. And I'm like, well, yeah, so did this drag show, went to this club, out with these people, you know. It gives a sense of like, you know, there's part of my life I'm just never going to talk about. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
that is a thing that I think if you are queer or you otherwise have lead a sort of different life to the sort of nuclear family ideal, you definitely feel that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder is like the end ideal situation here one where things are so well represented and things are so kind of commonplace. In terms of, you know, like being on TV shows or being in films, such that the cishet community does understand more about the queer community, so that conversations like that can just be kind of really easy instead of kind of marking you out as, because I've been in that situation. Even last week, I was somewhere which was predominantly cishet people, and you know, when you just kind of instinctively respond to something, and I said something about like, oh yeah, I did a drag set that was based off, and then they looked at me, and it was just kind of this really like, you're an alien, what are you doing here?
Oh no.
But it's odd because you obviously yourself, you don't consider it a strange thing to do. But so is the end goal here for it to just all be normalized?
Yeah, I think so too, to a large degree. Or at least even if it's not normalized, like they're aware that is a thing, right? So for example, like if a colleague of mine says like, oh yeah, they're really into bands, or like they played in a band, that's not a typical thing that people do, but it's not treated as like unusual,
Yeah, true.
and should be the same if I said like and I do drag.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely that kind of thing. So I mean, the other thing I know that's come up is about like doing sort of emotional labor and having to like explain to other people one's identity and like being made to kind of justify it. And I'm very much like, I do understand like the need to try to educate other people and like, not treat ignorance with hostility. But at the same time, it is tiring. And I don't think principally the burden should fall to queer people or people of color to have to do that work.
Definitely. Oh, and same for anyone who's part of any marginalized group, if it, like disabled people shouldn't have to spend our lives, like our very limited energy, explaining to non-disabled people who we are and why we want what we want. I had this conversation with my partner today because I said, oh, I really want to go in and join this group, and he said, you realize though that walking into it, you're going to have to explain probably every single time you go there your disability, your pronouns, your identity, and like who you are every single time. And I was like, yeah, and I don't know if I
Oh, that's
want to do
grim.
that.
Yeah, no, that's really grim. And yeah, it's a thing of like, well, we've got to at least meet us halfway, like, having create make sure things are accessible and reducing the burden on the individuals to have to kind of explain themselves.
So with your drag, are you aiming to educate people, but in a I would say like a fun way, a fun way?
Yeah, I guess so. If that is a goal that people can aspire to. Yeah, definitely. I think there's some stuff that I do like want to raise awareness of, but I'm also I guess conscious that some of the people that I'm performing to, it's like yeah, performing to a crowd who really understands the issues, like doing something about period poverty to a room full of AFAB people is probably not going to be educating anyone. But I suppose like trying to bring some awareness in general, in terms of the issues, I think. But yes, in a fun way, because I think the difficulty anytime what carry a message over to people is that someone will listen but won't sink in. And doing something more serious and emotional can be a challenge, especially if it's an audience have decided to come for a fun time. And then we can have hit with about really, really serious issues. I'm not saying that we shouldn't to discuss more serious matters. It's kind of trying to either sort of pace it in the context of sort of like a wide performance or a show.
And I think drag is such a wonderful vehicle for doing that as well, because you can, I know you said kind of earlier on, like once you get about a minute into a song and people have kind of started to feel comfortable and think that you're just doing a lip sync, and then you throw something subversive in that. I think that's so wonderful.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean that's the aim of just trying to do something that's a bit different. And I mean I have an idea and I'd like to have your thoughts on it. Is that I think drag can and potentially should become a bit more like theatre. something there's a bit more room for sort of thoughtful exploration of ideas that isn't
Ooh.
just about being fun. I'm not saying like drag shouldn't be fun and entertaining, but it's much more about getting people to think about stuff, having a bit more of an overarching theme to it.
Yeah, I mean, why not everything? Why not both? We've got this kind of we've got the mainstream, yeah, the mainstream drag, which is the drag queens, right? Which is very much an accepted part of society. I think it really says something that there were no drag kings at DragCon. But Teletubbies. So I think, yeah, in terms of drag still being a serious political, subversive, incredibly varied art form, I think it does still tick those boxes. I know what you mean in terms of if you go to your kind of typical drag show, you might not encounter serious themes. But also, I don't know if it's just because I go to kind of queer venues as opposed to gay venues, if you know what I mean. But I do tend to see stuff that is subversive, that is kind of it's playful with serious issues. So, you know, period poverty, as you were saying, and I know you've got one act where you like rip your shirt open and it says like refugees go home or something, and you've got all these
That's
really
Boris
sick
Johnson, I say, the context. Plenty of illiterates are like,
yeah, no,
what the fuck
obviously.
is going on?
Jesus Christ. No, so you've got these really serious issues, but you do it in such a way that's so captivating. Parts of the song are still funny. So you really kind of deliver it all. And I think that's wonderful. And what so many drag artists are managing to do is work like that.
No, exactly. Thanks. Thank you. It's nice to have validation, but also, you're very right in terms of things like, for example, like DragCon and kind of mainstream drag. I think definitely, it's still creating that having that space where there's room for alternative drag and there's room for much more exploration of things that isn't just mindless fun and entertainment. And I say that as someone who binge watches a lot of reality TV. Because, I think it's like a time and a place, but also having a place
Yeah,
that allows people to do some things which are challenging, and
definitely.
which you do provide, which is good. Good on
Yes.
you.
Oh, that, well, no. So at the moment, I don't. But
Well,
well, I mean, I've got the
there's
podcast.
this.
I'm that there is this. There is this. I'm taking a hiatus from performing and hosting the cabaret at the moment because because my mental and physical health was finding it a little bit too much. Which is a shame because I really, really, really want to platform all those, you know, incredible alternative and marginalized drag artists and cabaret performers. But I'll have to come back to that when I'm feeling a bit stronger myself, unfortunately.
Which is, I mean, that's entirely fair. And you are platforming a lot of artists now with the podcast. And also, like, you have to have time for yourself, because I think a lot of potential audiences don't realize that we have other jobs frequently. Like, this is supposed to be a hobby.
Oh God, but it's not, is it? It's like
Supposed to be.
it's like a second or third job. It's just it all kind of piles on. But I mean, it's definitely rewarding. But it does, yeah, it does still kind of take its toll. So one final question I want to ask you before well, actually there's two, but so one thing I wanted to touch on is how are you finding it being an AFAB performer in places dominated by cis gay men?
Well,
sums it up.
sorry. Mean, it's really weird sometimes of just being like. Like, it's almost like, do you say anything to like, did you speak up in terms of like my personal experiences of what I personally, what I do and what I feel is my art? And this is sort of coming back to the whole like selling out thing of like in certain circumstances, sorry, I can't English today. It's like I won't do any acts which are sort of challenging or more alternative or less glam in those kind of gigs, because I know like these are not people who necessarily want a in-depth sort of exploration of queerness.
Yeah.
So it's choosing that. I suppose the sort of other avenue in which I perform is I'm part of a dance group. It's called the Rainbow Nation Dance Academy, and they are really good. And there's a lot like and very diverse. So, but also there's a lot of like cis gay men in it. That's
Yeah.
just the truth. And that's fine. It's more, I think, therefore, it's trying to be conscious of and call out when people say things like fishy, for example, for the which is sort of a term. I know it's meant to use like a lot of drag artists use it to mean feminine, but itself is derived from sort of about vaginas in a derogatory way.
Yeah.
That smells quote unquote fishy, therefore that term. Or like some gay men should talk about not liking vaginas or slagging off women, and it's like someone's got to say something.
Yeah.
And I admit sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, because I'm not getting
Well,
don't want
again,
to get
the
involved in
burden
this.
shouldn't be on you to, yeah.
But that's a so there's a thing of like being aware that sometimes there are some performers whom I will like just never get on with, or there are some people whom I'm like I don't dislike you, but like this is not a space where I think our like in terms of art where like we mesh, like I have a very different take on like what I do versus what you do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just it's I think being an AFAB person when you know around people around you are cis and men is a little bit like there's that feeling of like even if no one's like being a dick or anything, it's like I don't fit in here necessarily.
And is there like a feeling of like lack of safety?
Sometimes yes. I think it's also especially when you have gay audiences, I'm just gonna say it in Clapham, who do not necessarily respect like boundaries.
Oh
Or
no.
like and it's not even like inappropriate touching, but kind of the stuff like getting up during some performances or like
Okay,
walking
yeah.
in front of the performer
Ugh.
while on stage. Just is that sort of thing of like
Lack of respect.
having respect for the people who are entertaining you.
Yeah.
It's like it's things like that, or things like how loudly they'll have the conversations, whether people paying attention during performance. It's small things where there's I was just like some people understand that, some people don't. But also if you're an AFAB person talking about AFAB issues, you can definitely see like there's a good chunk of a cis gay audience will just like turn off.
Yeah, the eyes glaze over, don't they? And they're just not interested. Yeah.
And it's
And then it
like
just it becomes a matter of, you know, like you any performer would when they're considering a show, it's who is the audience going to be and what number do I perform? And unfortunately, it does mean that you do play to the audience.
I think very much so. It's like, and I very much respect anyone who can sort of like just not care about what the audience thinks and just go out and do whatever the fuck they want, irrespective of the response.
So I will definitely hold my hands up and say, in the beginning when I started performing, I had no concept of like the differing kinds of audience members that you could have. So I just assumed all queer spaces are the same, all queer audiences are going to be the same. And oh my God, like,
Oh
really
no.
not true. Yeah.
Oh yeah. But then I suppose you go and completely ignorant and just do whatever you want to do. But
Oh God,
I respect
no,
that as
never
much
again.
as
It really takes like an emotional toll if you get up there repeatedly, not understanding that it's a question of you not understanding the audience,
rather than you not being like relatively good at your job. And if you keep kind of talking about disability issues or, you know, being non-binary, for instance, in front of cis gay men, and they're like switched off and you don't understand why, it can really kind of affect your confidence. But as soon as you realize that that's what it is, and you can start to say, okay, these numbers will be fine for this audience, and these numbers are okay to do in front of, you know, like a queer space.
Yeah, but definitely. And I also think, and it's not aimed with anyone in particular, I think like the host or like show producer can make a huge amount of difference to both like the audience, but also how the audience behaves.
Yeah, definitely.
I say this because like somewhere like Lippy, for example, I've mentioned, like it's like the audience is very mixed in terms of like, obviously, you know, and there are straight people who go to these, and we're talking about in terms of performers, there's a whole range of different performers, including AFAB people, including people who don't actually like turn up in drag, or guess what we might consider drag.
Okay.
But like everyone's really supportive because it's made out to be kind of a night that is silly, that is irreverent, that, you know, it's not a competition. Sometimes like performers have never performed before, so it's just an opportunity to get on stage and do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And so yeah, everyone's really supportive and everyone has a good time because that's what the show is made out to be. And host is someone who like is fine, like, you know, in doing his own thing isn't necessarily like hugely polished, but that's great because like the chaos is part of the show. Or even saying like some like mentioned like Rainbow Nation Dance Academy, like so when we do like say end of term show, it's not necessarily about being completely perfect. It's about a lot of people just going on stage and performing, and celebrating things like, you know, a diversity of like body positivity, or like, you know, diverse people in terms of people of color or AFAB people. It's like you can make a space that is inclusive, but it requires not just involvement of like a decent audience who aren't assholes, but also like show producers, hosts, etc. can do a lot, go a long way into making it like a place where people will pay attention, listen, and appreciate.
Yeah, definitely. And I've seen some hosts do it really well, and others who have maybe had a bit more of a laid back approach. And so you there's a different level of engagement with the audience. Yeah. So I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before, but because this is all about kind of like how marginalized people are often seen as kind of mythological creatures. So I'm a dragon because I feel like as a disabled person, I get stared at like I'm blue with horns on my head. So if you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
I mean, here's his problem. I knew that question was coming. I still couldn't think of a good one because I'm really terrible. If I could be one, not that I am one, but if I could be one, I would be Cerberus because I just want to be a dog. It'd be nice to just be like looked after and not have to deal with things. Have one purpose in life. You know, I mean, there's the bit where Cerberus gets kidnapped by Hercules, but apart from that,
pretty chilled out life,
very comfortable.
I can't remember, was my last podcast guest Cerberus as well? Have I now got two Cerberuses? That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
At the end of this, I'm going to do a poll of who was the most, what was the most popular kind of mythical creature to be.
I suppose we're doing an Asian mythological creature. No, so it's technically not a mythological creature, but rather sort of a character from a very old novel called Journey to the West. So there's a monkey character there called Sun Wukong. So he's basically he's kind of become immortal due to having stolen Heavenly Emperor's peaches. Basically, he's quite greedy and cheeky, but he is then forced to help this monk, who's the main protagonist, on his journey to the West. Hence the title of the book. And basically that monkey character is the person who kind of has to sort everything out for everybody else. And
That's
I
like
work in project
the
management. I work, no, this is how I feel I am in real life, because I work in project management, and
opposite
dear God,
of
I have to sort people's lives out
Oh wow,
all the time.
I understand wanting to be a dog and to just be like
Yes.
taken care of. Wow,
Yeah, exactly. That's, the dog is who I want to be. The monkey is who I am, who
wow,
I feel like get
that
locked
is
out at work.
fantastic. I love that as an answer. That is really good. Thank you.
But yes, you should definitely do a poll of the mythological creatures.
Well, I kind of expected more, like, I don't know why I thought this, but I think because I've got a lot of drag artists and I've got a lot of poets, I assume there'd be more like sirens or mermaids or like water-based people, but there's not. It's yeah.
That's
And it was an interesting
fair.
bunch. I don't know why I thought, yeah, artists and poets are going to be like mermaids, but yeah, it's a weird thought. Anyway, moving on.
That makes
So
sense, I think. That does make sense. I suppose like sort of more beautiful, mystical,
yeah,
ethereal kind of creatures.
right. That's Anyway,
Missed opportunity.
I was like, guys, what are you doing? Come on, folks. Cool. So. Do you have anything that you'd like to share with our audience?
Yes, I do. Yes. So, content warning will contain like homophobic, transphobic slurs, as well as sexism and a sexist slurs as well. It's all fun. Yay.
It away, Miles.
Thank you. I want to be a straight comedian's wife. I want to be the trouble and strife responsible for every bad decision in his mediocre life. I want to be a bad cook, a lazy cook. No cook at all. I want to be the killjoy listening in on his calls, and I'm so uptight. I can't stand him fucking another woman in my sight. I'm all about the cleaning, the laundry, the house, the bills, the kids. His expectations are lower than my baggy, saggy tits. Use your imagination. And I won't let him fuck me in the arse, especially if he tries when he hasn't asked. I want to be a chocoholic, shopaholic, alcoholic bitch. I'll make his worst regret the day we were hitched. I want to be too bored, too involved, too posh, too coarse. I want to be the unfaithful whore with a face like a horse. I want to be the driving force behind his audience shouting, "Just get a fucking divorce." I want to be the straight comedian's tranny. I want to entrap my victims with my fanny. But beware, it's all a trick. Because you know what's going to make a man sick? The sight of my dick. Too tall, too manly, too hairy, a freak who wins every sporting competition but is simultaneously too weak to be a real man. I want to be a confused lesbian tomboy who needs to go back to playing with her toys and not being one of the guys. Oh, she'd be over the moon to play football in a club owned by a tax-dodging Russian tycoon. I want to be 76 genders. I want to be a tack helicopter. I want to be a freakish, fluid, family-hating gender bender. And you know what really gets me off? It's making Jeremy Clarkson and Piers Morgan soft. I want to be a straight comedian's faggot, the AIDS-ridden fiend to make Thatcher vomit. I want to be the gay best friend played by James Corden. I want to be a brain-dead, cock-sucking moron. I want to make the cisheads believe that the men in dresses who molest kids are drag queens, not priests. I want to be a bullied, effeminate wimp living on art and hope. I want to be a self-absorbed gym bunny more ripped than pictures of the Pope. I want to be the reason straight men are uncomfortable in rooms. I want to make them feel the way they make women do. I want to be a straight comedian's straight comedian. I want to be the edgelord apex of the mediocre comedian. And if you think this poem is too mean to them, I would never laugh at a straight comedian. That's it.
Oh my God. That was so wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing. Again, for like the
Thank
sixth
you.
time on this show, I'm so glad that I muted myself because I was cackling away. I was trying to like
remember quotes of it so that I could tell you I loved this line, but there was just too many.
Oh, thank you very much. I've
That's
enjoyed
really
doing it.
good.
I should do more.
Yeah, right. Oh my God, do more spoken word, please.
Yeah. I used to do more because I was at one point at Trinity University, like a PA to a poet. So she took me along to like various gigs and I would like support that. But I still did some spoken word bad and kind of stopped. And I started getting busy and working.
Yeah, that'll do it. But no, that was amazing. More of that, please. And if you do want some poetry inspiration, come along to Rebel Riot Poetry on the last Monday every other month.
Exciting.
it's online. And this month we've got Bridget Hart and Crow Rudd. So two incredible trans poets there.
Fantastic.
Whoop whoop.
Thanks.
I know. It's amazing, right? Marl Peril, it's been a delight and not perilous at all. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Good news. No, thank you so much for having me. Like, I'm really honored. It's been a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun. Thank you.